We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, March 4th, and President Donald Trump is set to give a very highly anticipated joint address to Congress this evening after the pretty explosive meeting with Ukraine President Zelensky last Friday. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is cutting off all funding to Ukraine. This coming from Fox News. The Trump administration is pausing all aid to Ukraine, including weapons in transit or in Poland. The pause comes days after a contentious meeting between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and President Donald Trump in the White House. The U.S. Homeland Security News says the White House announced a complete cessation of funding to Ukraine. Trump has outlined key steps for Zelensky to restart the U.S.-backed peace talks. This coming from Town Hall, speaking during an event about a new technology investment in America from the White House Monday afternoon yesterday. President Trump was asked what President Zelensky has to do in order to reopen the talks, the direct talks about how to end Russia's invasion of his country. Trump said, I just think he should be more appreciative. So this also coming as well as the Senate Democrats have blocked a bill that would have protected women's sports, and U.S. Senator John Fetterman, who is, you know, occasionally based, but mostly still a Democrat, we got to remember that. He posted this: the small handful of trans athletes in Pennsylvania in a political maelstrom deserve an ally, and I am one. Depersonalized as, quote, they, them in a political ad, but are just school children. Empty show votes or cruelty on social media aren't part of a thoughtful, dignified solution. Well, I kind of thought that's what they wanted was they, them. Isn't that the thing from the left that they can select their pronouns? Well, let's welcome in Representative Tim Burchett from the great state of Tennessee. And Representative, where do you want to start? A lot of news going on. Good morning.
Well, thank you. I would start a little bit on Zelensky. You know, it was masterful, really, what Trump was trying to do. And you're an attorney. You get this. But Trump's always playing the long ball. Everybody plays checkers, and Trump's playing chess. Here he comes in and says these rare earth minerals, you know, we need to cut this deal on rare earth minerals. Everybody, yeah, whatever, applauds that. It's good trade. But the reality is it was an incredibly thoughtful idea, because the rare earth minerals are in areas where there's combat. And there is no way that Putin would ever want to kill an American citizen, especially one that was there not in a military role. That would invoke the wrath of Donald J. Trump. And that's exactly what Trump was trying to do. Kill two birds with one stone. He stops the war. He helps American business with these rare earth minerals that we need. And Zelensky slapped him in the face. It was sort of like I was flying up yesterday, and I had this, I was in between my sleeping and the bumpy plane ride. I was thinking, my parents were big supporters of the Billy Graham ministry. It'd have been like if Reverend Graham came to our house in Knoxville, Tennessee, after my parents had written him a very large check demanding out of us. I mean, that's exactly what Zelensky was doing. Here we are, we've given him over $250 billion, and there's a lot more under the table and around, you know, all the advising, you get it. And then he started making demands on us, and he was not thankful, he was not gracious. And I applaud President Trump just for his self-control. I mean, I would have You know, I'm from Tennessee. I would have grabbed him up by his shirt collar and thrown him out on Pennsylvania Avenue and told him to get his own ride home. And I just thought, you know, that a lot of this has been mischaracterized, and him and J.D. Vance were kind and considerate. And then that clown comes in here, and he's obviously been, you know, he was meeting with Democrats, and they were explaining to him how it works, and it doesn't work that way. I mean, Trump's negotiated with Teamsters, for goodness sakes. Zelensky is nowhere near their league.
So where do you think this goes from here? Because I agree with you fully that Zelensky pretty much blew it, and he's not negotiating with the potted plant that was Joe Biden earlier. He is now facing a very formidable negotiating opponent, as it were, with Donald Trump. So what is Trump's best next move?
I think he doesn't do anything. I think it's Zelensky's move, and he knows he screwed up, and he's going to Europe, and they're all – you know, rattling their aluminum foil sabers, and they're not going to do anything. They don't have the checkbook. They don't have the manpower. I think the Tennessee National Guard has more than some of those European countries have. And, you know, I just don't see he's in a spot. He needs to come back hat in hand, say, hey, took some bad advice. Let's cut this deal. And, yeah, how in the world can the Democrats run on more war? That's and how could they run on, you know, men and women's sports, but they continue to do it. I think they're just appealing to their incredibly dwindling far-left base that they are in threat of losing even more of. And, I just don't think it's going to end well for Zelensky. He can't make it without our money, and he knows it, and he needs our investment over there. And I think this clown show is getting ready to come to an end.
I'm speaking with Representative Tim Burchett from the great state of Tennessee. And you're right. I mean, even CNN data analysts show that Americans prefer Trump's handling of the Russia-Ukraine war over Biden. And I think that's very clear as well in the Trump mandate. And yet we see that the Democrats are still pushing for continued war. I mean, they're basically running on, well, you need to feel sorry for Ukraine and some kind of, you know, something humanitarianism. And all of this. And so with this minerals deal, do you think, Representative, that this was twofold, like you said, as far as like the killing the two birds with one stone? But is it more about ending the war with just a side benefit to the U.S.? Or what's really the negotiating tactic here, knowing that Russia is going to continue as long as Ukraine has the funding to also continue?
Well, I think it brings a lot more people to the table in the world market on the rare earth minerals. I can't stress that enough. They're saying, "Hey, wait a minute, we've got rare earth minerals. Trump's open for business, and America's open for business, and let's get on with that." And I think it's a very very small window for Zelensky. Also, with our reducing of regulations, we're going to start seeing them getting rare earth minerals here in this country. And we've been fighting for 20 years in Minnesota to get one of the mines open there because of the environmental wackos that just keep putting up regulation after regulation and forcing us to get it overseas from slave labor and poisoning poor children who go down into these mines that unprotected. So I think there's a lot of layers to it, but I think he's already making waves to come back and say he's sorry. You know, he's the one who requested the meeting. They were just saying, sign the dadgum papers, let's go. And he wanted a meeting in the White House, and I think he thought he was going to come in here and big dog after his Democrat advisors, but it didn't go well. And the American public sees that, ma'am. I don't care how many times CNN or one of these far left congresswomen or men get up and speak. It's their numbers are dwindling. Can't say that enough.
Absolutely. And I think that the American people do see that. And it's mainly due to the fact that that there's no more media gatekeeping. You don't just have the little clips of the meeting that could have been framed differently on legacy media than seeing the entire broadcast for ourselves. And as you mentioned, Representative, that Trump has said that America is open for business. This also comes with Trump securing a $100 billion investment from Taiwan with a semiconductor manufacturing company, and also announcing 25% tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico. You know, these are just other things that he can walk and chew gum. He can do things, obviously, multifaceted on the world stage. What do you think he's going to emphasize as perhaps a forecast tonight in his joint address to Congress?
I think he's going to reiterate some positive things that they've already accomplished, and such as men not in women's sports. My buddy Riley Gaines has done a great job with that. She's a fellow Tennessean, and I think he'll emphasize some of the positive things he's already done. But I want to warn America, all these so-called conservatives that come home and preach the red meat to y'all at the MAGA dinners and the Reagan Day and whatever dinners, and then they come up here and then they cut these bad deals behind your back. Y'all need to start paying attention. I was with Marjorie Taylor Greene the other day, and we were sitting in a Republican meeting, and I said, you know, Marjorie, the problem's not going to come from the Marxist over there on the left, the Democrats. The real problem's going to come from the Republican Party, and we are not codifying those things President Trump has put into place. You know, why in the world are we sending our tax dollars to NPR and the public broadcasting? They've got Sesame Street. They've got Bert and Ernie. They got a billion-dollar industry, but they keep it separate. And, oh, no, that's another section. NPR the other day. Ma'am, you know what? I was listening to that, and why, I don't know. I was pulling into my farm, and I thought, well, I need to, I guess, my dose of nausea today. And do you know what they call the man on the radio said was what he – leveled as propaganda? God what? Bless the USA by Lee Greenwood.
Wow.
And I nearly wrecked my truck. I ran it into my fence. My horses would have gotten out. I was like, that is your American tax dollars paying for that. They can say whatever the heck they want, but I don't want my money paying for it. And we're borrowing the money to do it anyway. Why in the world? And I want to warn people too, and I know this is a Christian radio station, but if we save all this money in Doge and Trump makes all these cuts, and then we turn around and give it to the war pimps at the Pentagon, they have not passed an audit in 8 audits. They haven't even completed it in their arrogance. And you know how we punish them? The last National Defense Authorization Act last year, or it might have been this year, we passed. We gave them $8 billion new dollars. Ma'am, we had 4 four-star generals at the end of World War II. We have over 40 now. It's not my daddy's war. My daddy fought in the Pacifics in the Marine Corps. He was on Peleliu and Okinawa. You know, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. We load up our industrial might and start rolling across the Pacific 6 or 8 months later. It's not that war anymore. It's going to be instantaneous. It's going to be drones. It's a different thing. We're building weapon systems that we mothball the day they come off the line. And they sit there in these meetings and tell us, Republicans, say, and they start pointing out, well, they make the plane in your district. They make the bombs in your district. They make the guns in your district. And that's all they care about. And listen, when we gave Zelensky our missile defense system, I didn't like that idea, but it happened by executive order. And guess what? We had to replenish our missile defense system, a multi-billion-dollar no-bid contract. And who owns stock in that? Republicans and Democrats. Y'all better start paying attention to what's going on. You better start holding your so-called conservative representatives. And they got all the cute cliches, and they say all the great stuff, and they're quotable, and they're good-looking, and they've got a great history. But they're selling you out. All they care about is their portfolio. You know, my daddy, World War II Marine, Pacific. My mama lost her brother in Europe. And my mama actually flew an airplane during the Second World War. My dad had a saying, I think he was quoting somebody else, but it was loosely, old men make decisions and young men die. We better start paying attention. And this is because this will not end well. If we make all these cuts, God has blessed this country so much, and we have one shot at this. And if we turn away and allow those folks, if we allow the money changers back into the temple, we are going to have a real problem. And we will never fix it, and we will lose this great republic that God has given us.
Well said. Well said, Representative Tim Burchett. I so appreciate your admonition, which I think is very wise, that we can't trust people just because they run under Republican anymore, you know, than we should be immediately against someone just because they're a Democrat. Occasionally, Democrats can have okay ideas or be on the right side of things. It's very occasional, but still. But the point is, we need to make sure that the majority of conservatives, of people who are actually implementing the America First agenda, predicated on a biblical worldview, of course, and good policy, is strengthened in the midterms, especially in the United States Senate. But we need to make sure that the Uniparty is not the winners here. It's actually the American people. So, Representative, really appreciate it. I would encourage everyone to follow Representative Tim Burchett on X and get all of his great content there. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, we're going to take a break from talking about everything going on in the Trump administration, the executive, and actually turn to the Supreme Court. Yes, they're actually in session as well. And today there will be arguments that are the first case actually since 2005 on the issue of guns and really a kind of a Second Amendment question, but this is a lawsuit actually from Mexico against U.S. gun makers that comes before the Supreme Court. This coming from SCOTUS blog, just 2 weeks after the Trump administration designated six Mexican cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, Mexico will come to the Supreme Court on Tuesday in its effort to hold U.S. gun makers liable for cartel violence committed with U.S.-made weapons. Mexico is seeking billions of dollars from seven major U.S. gun makers and one gun wholesaler to recover costs related to gun violence and to stop the marketing and trafficking of illegal guns to Mexico. The gun makers counter that the lawsuit, quote, challenges how the American firearms industry has openly operated in broad daylight for years. So the law includes a key carve out that allows lawsuits when the harm at issue stems from a gun manufacturer's knowing violation of U.S. law. So apparently Mexico is arguing that because the gun manufacturers know that in some instances their guns are used illegally or fall into the hands of the cartels, that somehow they should be held liable for this. So very interesting case this morning. Let's welcome in Gerard Folletti, the founder of the Lawfare Project. And Gerard, this seems to me really hypocritical just on face that Mexico, with all of the fentanyl that's coming over the border, with all of the gang violence, with, you know, all of the things that we, the American people, are dealing with, they're running to the Supreme Court and going, oh, gun manufacturers, it's your fault for our cartels. I mean, this is almost laughable.
Laughable, and it's shameful that the way the Mexican government is handling the crisis in its own country with cartel violence isn't by cracking down on the cartels, it's by suing gun manufacturers in the United States. So let's argue for a second, even if they were to win, what happens to that money? I'm going to bet you that most of it finds its way into the pockets of the cartels. That's how ridiculous this is. It's really meant to misdirect and to not do anything about what's actually plaguing Mexico. It's a lawsuit and nothing else. The Mexican government should be focusing on actions against the cartels, not on lawsuits against gun manufacturers.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, to me, it's fascinating that Mexico actually thinks it can run to our U.S. Supreme Court and suggest that they can get some kind of relief. But apparently, I mean, is the standing question at all at issue here?
The standing is not really the issue. I think Mexico does have standing to assert these claims. The issue is whether it can establish proximate cause, whether it can establish that the gun manufacturers could foresee that their practices would cause cartel violence in Mexico. And at the same time, it's a question of whether what the gun manufacturers are doing is arguably aiding and abetting the cartels in Mexico. So I think those are the questions that the Supreme Court is looking at. It's not a case that's going to be decided on standing.
Interesting. Well, and according to SCOTUS blog here, the district court had originally dismissed Mexico's case, ruling that Mexico's claims were barred by a federal law, the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, intended to shield the U.S. gun industry from lawsuits in the U.S. courts for misuse of guns by others. And, you know, this makes sense because, you know, if you take this out of context of, you know, the left or, you know, now Mexico suggesting that just because someone down the chain and the stream of commerce ends up using a product illegally or for some kind of criminal use or unlawful use, that then you can go back and attribute that directly to the manufacturer. I mean, similarly to say somebody takes a baseball bat and conducts an assault with it. I mean, obviously the manufacturer didn't intend it to be used for that purpose. It knows that, hey, you know, maybe potentially some nefarious actor could end up using this for unlawful purposes or, you know, breaking a car window and with a baseball bat. But that doesn't mean that the manufacturer should be held liable or somehow stop making their product just because some people use it in a way that it wasn't intended. I mean, this seems to be very just basic law, at least, you know, from what I remember of the case law on this. So how is this different? Is it just because it's firearms that Mexico has a potential case here?
Well, what makes a difference is that the federal law that protects gun manufacturers does have an exception for violations of a state statute. So if a manufacturer violates a law, for example, in advertising or in designing or in input or somehow doing something illegal in the stream of commerce, that does open them up to liability. That has been tested. That was tested in the Sandy Hook case where the plaintiffs actually did get a measure of relief. But those are very narrow exceptions. That's the exception that Mexico is looking to get through. And that's why they're arguing that there were deceptive practices, that the gun manufacturers were actually aiding and abetting. That was an intentional violation of Mexico's laws against aiding and abetting. But it's a stretch. As you say, the baseball bat example is a great one. The other one that's often used is the car example. Car manufacturers know that people unfortunately sometimes drive drunk and cause accidents in which people die. Does that mean a car manufacturer should be liable for every drunk driving death in the country? Reasonable people would say, of course not. But this is the type of law that Mexico is pushing to stretch. If the court accepts Mexico's reasoning, then pretty much any manufacturer could be liable for anything that is even remotely foreseeable, no matter how bizarre, as a consequence of using that product.
And so this is going to be a really fascinating argument. And, you know, it doesn't to me. I mean, I'm always looking for, okay, what's going on kind of behind the scenes? I don't think that, you know, Mexico just decided, oh, hey, look, you know, look at this law and we can go and sue the United States for our own cartels and their use of guns illegally. And so to your knowledge, is there anyone else behind this, you know, maybe someone on the left that is funding this litigation to use this as an argument? Because to me, it's pointedly trying to simply get at gun manufacturers and that industry. And the collateral consequence of the Supreme Court siding with Mexico would be that the left gets more gun control.
Well, I think I'd be very interested to know who suggested this strategy to the Mexican government. I think that Mexico is funding it itself, but for them, it's a political stunt. It's instead of dealing with the issue, they're diverting attention and saying it's America's fault. It's American gun manufacturers, which is easy because, you know, Mexican authorities don't want to be killed by the cartels for actually dealing with them. On the other hand, in the U.S., we do have a lot of interests that are aligned with this policy. We've seen a number of liberal, very liberal states like New York State with very strict gun laws, including Massachusetts, which houses some of these gun manufacturers, joining the lawsuit against the gun manufacturers in amicus briefs. We've seen a lot of support from left-wing anti-gun groups, the same groups that have been receiving money from, you know, various nefarious actors over the years. They're all aligned ideologically on this. So it may be Mexico's lawsuit, but you're seeing a lot of arguments coming from left-wing states and left-leaning political groups that are participating in the process on Mexico's side.
Really interesting. And so some of the commentary that I've seen also has argued that there could be indirect collateral consequences for the Second Amendment. Do you see any, you know, sort of issue here that the Supreme Court may, you know, cabin this totally with just the civil liability issue, or if they end up siding with Mexico, which, I mean, I can't possibly see how that could happen with the current composition of the Supreme Court, but we've seen more bizarre things. But do you think that there could be any sort of collateral consequence on the United States and our citizens' right to keep and bear arms from this type of an outcome?
The collateral consequence, if Mexico prevails, is that it makes it less likely for gun manufacturers to want to continue manufacturing guns if they're exposed to liability. So we may have a strong Second Amendment right. We may have strong Second Amendment protections that the Supreme Court has upheld consistently in the last 15 or so years and even increased in the protective of our rights. But if no gun manufacturer wants to actually manufacture and sell guns because of liability, those Second Amendment rights become meaningless. So there is a big consequence to Mexico winning this in that it could impose such a high cost on gun manufacturers that there will be fewer guns on the market, fewer companies doing business.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Gerard Folletti, who is an attorney and the founder of the Lawfare Project. And Gerard, so what are you looking for in today's arguments? I mean, I know that the lawyers, like, as listen to these things often, you know, very interested in the type of line of questioning from each of the justices and kind of reading the tea leaves, as it were, to see kind of where they're going to side. But are there any justices in particular that you're paying attention to more in this type of a lawsuit?
Well, I'd love to see Chief Justice Roberts and what his line of questioning will be. I think that will be very indicative of which way the court's going to go. He's no longer the swing vote because it really is a 6-3 composition, but his mindset is key in seeing where he is. That's where more likely than not the court is going to end up. And I expect to see questioning about what constitutes, you know, what kind of state of mind you would need to attribute to a company for violating an aiding and abetting statute when it comes to guns. And also more generally, we will see a lot of arguments and hypotheticals about, you know, what's foreseeable and what isn't. What kind of injury is foreseeable? What kind of product can foreseeably cause that injury? I think we'll see the baseball bat example. We'll see the car example. We'll see other examples of cases where something is or is not foreseeable. So it should be, honestly, entertaining questioning, but watch for Chief Justice Roberts and what he is asking.
Really interesting. Well, Gerard Folletti, always really appreciate your comments. And I'm certainly going to be tuning in to the oral arguments today. And it's a great thing that we can now listen to those arguments live. You can go to C-SPAN. You can actually go directly to the Supreme Court's website. The arguments start at 10 a.m. Eastern. So if you, like me, are interested in actually hearing the arguments for yourselves and not just kind of the breakdown and a couple of the clips later on after the fact, you can always listen. But sometimes, you know, they go on for hours. So kind of depends on what your day looks like, but always interesting. But in the last few minutes of this segment, I want to pivot here to following up on what I didn't have time to talk about yesterday, which was the second controversy of the Epstein files. And actually, Attorney General Pam Bondi was on with Sean Hannity last night with an update on the Epstein documents. This is part of what she had to say.
We all did. And the FBI handed over a couple hundred pages of documents. But, you know, Sean, I gave them a deadline of Friday at 8 a.m. to get us everything. And a source had told me where the documents were being kept. Southern District of New York, shock. So we got them all by, hopefully all of them, Friday at 8 a.m., thousands of pages of documents. I have the FBI going through them, and Cash is also, now that we have Cash here, it's a game changer, of course, and Cash is going to, Director Patel, is going to get us a detailed report as to why the FBI withheld all of those documents.
So this is really fascinating to me because on one hand, you know, you saw this promise that, oh, the documents would be released, and we were promised that last week, and then it basically was a big nothing burger. And after the influencers, or, you know, I don't really call them journalists because they're not really journalists. They're activists, and that's fine. But let's, you know, call these commentators, you know, what they are. They're not independent journalists, but they were selectively curated and invited specifically to come to a meeting and handed these binders that is now being termed Bindergate. And suddenly we're not listening to Bindergate anymore because we've been totally distracted as a nation with the Zelensky Oval Office meeting the very next day. Interesting, right? But these binders, I think, were the key issue because if Pam Bondi, and I think she knew this, going into that meeting, was going to say later that the files were being withheld and we are going to put a demand on the Southern District of New York, and that's really the story, then why hand these influencers, knowing that what they do is post things for likes and clicks and shares and drama and all of that on social media, why hand them something that, you know, walking out of the White House, and I've been there many times, walking out of the West Wing, there are always photographers right there on Media Row. I mean, you just know that. And then they took this picture, you know, holding them up like, hey, look, we got something. And there have been a wide variety of ways that some of these people have tried to explain this or perhaps spin this. I personally am not buying it. What I think happened here, and we'll see if anything that the SDNY actually gave to Pam Bondi and Kash Patel is anything new. That remains to be seen. That's still a big question mark. But as far as Bindergate, what I actually think happened is that someone, whether it was internally in the White House communications office or whoever it was that decided these binders are a good idea, is trying to undermine Pam Bondi and possibly the president as well. And I saw this happen a lot of times when I worked for President Trump during his first term, that there are definitely people that have their own agenda. Hopefully, there are fewer of those people significantly in the second administration. But I think whoever decided to print out these binders, hand them to the influencers, and they're all taking pictures. I mean, you know, Liz Wheeler, who is a friend of mine, I respect her. You know, she posts this picture saying, you know, exclusive and you know, I got a copy of the Epstein files, as if this was going to be some groundbreaking new revelation that was contained in these binders, which ended up being completely not true. And it caused a distraction and it caused speculation as to, well, does Pam Bondi really even know what's going on? Did she know that these binders didn't contain all of these things? Even some people from MAGA calling for her resignation, saying, oh, Pam Bondi doesn't know what's going on and she completely blew it on this one. I don't think it was Pam Bondi's fault, and I also don't think that it was the influencer's fault directly. They probably just took this binder, walked outside, held it up, hadn't even opened it yet, is my speculation. And whoever it was that was behind this, I think, was trying to undermine Pam Bondi. And if the influencers were doing a good job, they would suggest that, but perhaps they can't, because then they think, well, I might not get invited back to the White House, which just goes to show that you can't always trust what people are telling you, because they may have to spin it in order to cover themselves and do what's best for their own likes and clicks instead of just telling you how it is. So this will be very interesting. We'll see if these new revelations from the SDNY will yield anything. I don't know. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If we have learned anything from the 2024 election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. So would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor 5 ultrasounds. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or you can visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we've been talking about this week, we need to be daily in the Word and studying Scripture so that we can live our Christian lives according to the principles of God. And if we don't first know those principles, then when we encounter various news of the day items, political controversy, culture controversy, or expectations, then we may not know the best way to live out our faith as admonished in Scripture. And there is a great new movie that is talking about all of that type of controversy and how to be a culture warrior. And in fact, that is the name of the movie, A Culture Warrior. This is Don Wildman, our founder here at AFA, his story. So Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. Listeners can go to culturewarrior.movie to watch this. And if you are a conservative Christian, you need to see this movie. If you are not, then host a movie night in your home and invite over some people who may be impacted by this film. But here with me now is Tim Wildman, Don Wildman's son, and of course, our current president at AFA. And Tim, I'm so grateful that you joined me to talk about The Culture Warrior, because I've had a few other people who were involved in this film on previously, but I want to ask you specifically, I mean, you know, you grew up obviously with your dad, and watching this, take us through kind of what it was like to have Don Wildman as your father and also a cultural leader.
Hey, good morning, Jenna. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Yeah, well, it's very formal. You and I text on a regular basis, and now you're interrogating me here. You're interviewing me.
Formal interrogation, I guess.
It's good to be with you this morning, and it's good to have Jenna. You doing our morning program for us.
Thank you.
Each day,
I love it.
Bringing the news of the day to the folks and trying, as you said, giving folks a biblical analysis of what's happening in our country and in our world. We wanted to give this movie one last push. It came out last fall, but a lot of people maybe are unaware of it. It's the story of this ministry. If you listen to American Family Radio, the parent ministry of AFR is American Family Association, which was started by my dad, known then as the National Federation for Decency, in 1977. So a couple years from now, we'll celebrate 50 years. Unbelievable.
Amazing.
To even say that sounds, in my eyes, because as you say, I lived the whole thing. 50 years of ministry, because I'm 61, I'll be 62 in a couple of days. In fact, March 6th, I'll be 62, and gift cards are acceptable. If people want to get those in the mail now, so they'll get to my office by...
Two-day shipping, though. You got to do that, because if it's
Olive Garden, Outback, there's many different ways you can go on that.
Chick-fil-A, God's Chicken.
Yes, Chick-fil-A. Yeah. So, I'm just kidding on that, folks.
But he's not, really.
But I'm not going to sit in the back, okay?
Exactly. So, okay.
All right, so I did live this with my dad. My dad was a Methodist minister in the 60s and the 70s, and he felt the call of the Lord, is the only way to put it. In 1976, Christmas holidays, we were watching television as a family. I have three siblings. They're all younger than me, and we were gathered around the TV set. And that time, you didn't have but three channels, you know, and PBS. And my dad just couldn't, he couldn't find anything for the family to watch because of sex, violence, and profanity. And so he felt a call that night, which led to 6 months later, him resigning his pastorate. The Lord God Almighty was speaking to him directly to leave the pulpit and start a parachurch ministry or an organization to give leadership to Christians who wanted to speak out and do something about the decline in moral values in America. That's basically the essence of what happened in 1977. And here we are today, all these years later, because all those decades, my dad and the staff and the board of directors, and our supporters began to grow around the country. People who said, "Yeah, I identify exactly with what you're saying. I want to do something. I want to take a stand." And so that's all. There's a lot of fascinating individual stories over the last nearly five decades are contained in this movie, and this movie's free to watch. We're not charging anything to watch the movie, and I've had many people who've seen it, and maybe some of them were friends of mine who were, you know, marginally knowledgeable of the story of Don Wildman and the American Family Association, and they came back to me later and said, "Wow, I had no idea that your dad did all this." And so the movie is available. Go watch it. It's a documentary style movie. So it's called CultureWarrior.com. CultureWarrior.com. Dot movie. Excuse
dot
me.
Movie.
Thank you. I knew I'd do that. Dot com just flows off our lips every day, all day, doesn't it? So everything we say is dot com.
Well, I was just going to say that Adam had it wrong in my notes here.
No.
So I was going to believe
Adam.
You, so.
Adam said it. Your producer was mouthing to me, no, it's dot movie. And I was trying to interpret
He's
him because, you know, the Bible says we need an interpreter when somebody speaks something you can't understand. So it's CultureWarrior.movie. CultureWarrior.movie. Again, it's free. Check it out. I think people will be fascinated to learn all the things that my dad was able to accomplish over the decades.
Yeah, and one of the things, Tim, that really stood out to me as well is taking this vision, this calling that your dad had, and now, you know, almost 50 years later, seeing what the ministry has become. This didn't just overnight now have, you know, National Radio Network have an opportunity for so many people like me to serve full time in ministry. And I love that. And I'm a direct beneficiary of his ministry and his vision, and actually pursuing that calling from the Lord, as you and your family are as well, and so many people around the country, around the world, that are affected by AFA. And so, you know, taking that and being willing to say, okay, I'm resigning my pulpit ministry and then starting something new, I mean, that can be very intimidating for people. So,
you don't have a check.
Yeah.
And you got four kids to feed. He was the pastor of the First United Methodist Church in South Haven, Mississippi, and he was moving up the ladder, so to speak, and he was also doing well with books and tours and things of that nature. My dad was very ingenuitive, I guess you could say, if that's the right word. He was very energetic. This is the reason God called him, because he was very organized, energetic, and very had a lot of what somebody calls horse sense. You ever heard that expression?
I have, actually. Yeah. Not in a while, but
yeah.
it's a lot of boomer terminology.
Yeah, it's horse sense. You call it common sense, but it's also he had Ed Vitagliano, my associate here, who worked with my dad for many years, said that your dad had the ability to see around corners in that he could see what was coming down the pike, especially in the culture. That's why we mentioned Culture Warrior. There were other people that started about the same time that a lot of our listeners are going to remember the names of Chuck Colson, James Dobson, Adrian Rogers. Those are just three. Phyllis Schlafly, Beverly and Tim LaHaye. You remember those names?
Absolutely.
And they were a part, along with my dad and many others, of what the left began to pejoratively call the religious right back in the 70s and 80s. In fact, the, quote, religious right was a large part of the reason that Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980 and then again in 1984. So the political influence of the movement, the Christian conservative movement, was enormous in those days. Still has a lot of influence, but we have got to save our country. Mm-hmm. Jenna, and I'm not talking just make America great again, which is wonderful. Who doesn't want to make America great again? And I appreciate the efforts of politicians who do stand for righteousness and who do take a stand. And certainly President Trump has done a great job these last few weeks in taking a stand for many things that will advance the cause of religious liberty and freedom. And we're appreciative of that. But the answer is not going to come for our country to turn around in politics, our government. That's part of it. But the really soul of what needs to happen in our country is a Christian revival, is for our churches to become aflame again with righteousness, as I think Alex de Tocqueville, the French historian, was the one who said he came to America and discovered the greatness of America, and it was not until he went into the churches that he found out what America's, the essence of the greatness of our country was. So the essence of the greatness of our country was a fear of the Lord and a belief in right and wrong and moral values and those things. So we can't you can't disengage from that calling. And American Family Association, American Family Radio, we continue today to take stands that will advance Christian moral values in America, because we believe it's very, very important.
It is. And you're so right, Tim, that the same battle lines, because evil will continue to persist until Jesus
right,
returns.
That's and, right.
And so we have to continue on that same mission of promoting good and hopefully, to the best of our ability, restraining evil in the civil government sphere,
yes.
But then advocating for truth. And so how did you always know then growing up that you would then take over this ministry, or how did that story go?
I guess yes and no. I mean, I started to work here in 1986, and to help my dad, and that just led to me moving up into leadership, and then my dad resigned about, I don't know, when was that, 12 years ago or so. He got, first of all, he got like, St. Louis encephalitis, got bit by a mosquito, and sounds odd, but I mean, it sounds that something so small could do so much damage, but it really took a toll on him. It was a virus of the brain, and soon after that, he just didn't have the capability, really, mentally or with energy, to continue. And he, you know, I inherited, you could say, and the board of directors had to confirm my presidency here, but I took over the leadership role. So I guess I expected that might happen one day, but I didn't know when it would happen or what the circumstances would be. But my dad was kind of a guy who could do things on his own. He kind of managed the whole ministry. He was like a one-man human resources. You know, if you had a problem, you went to Brother Don. I don't care if you were, you know, cleaning up the yard. He kind of managed things like that. That's all he ever knew how to do. And then when I took over, so to speak, God really blessed me with a great team around me to accomplish the mission. And our ministry grew. We've grown. And we do have one of the largest radio networks in America, 170 stations across the country, broadcasting the gospel of Christ and telling people what's happening in our country. And we have a great team here to accomplish this. And the most important thing for many of our listeners is a big thank you for writing checks, because this is a very expensive operation to run. This costs a lot of money to operate American Family Association, just the radio network alone, with the engineering and the towers and the cost associated with everything that has to go day to day. It's very expensive, and so people have been generous over the decades to support us financially, and because of that, we've never been in debt except for one time. So we, Bible says, no old man, nothing except love, right? I got that paraphrased, but I think I'm right on that. So we don't owe anybody anything, so we're able to do our work unencumbered by, you know, always having to beg for money or something. My dad used to say, if you always got to beg for money, you just need to shut it down. Because you're obviously not doing something that the Lord's called you to do, something that he will provide a way. And our supporters have provided that way over all these decades. I'm sorry, Jenna, but I'm going to have to get out of this interview some way or another, because I got guests who are driving up to the building to do devotion.
Of course.
And I got to go greet them.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Tim. We'll let you go then. And I appreciate it so much. And the listeners go to culturewarrior.movie. I got it. Go and do your thing and greet the guests, and we'll close out well. Don't worry. And so this is Culture Warrior Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. And, you know, if you are someone who wants to see a story of someone who understood the calling on his life and said, okay, here I am, Lord, send me. I mean, that has been my life's prayer. And I will tell you from experience as well, be very careful If you are very sincere about praying that, because God will send you into places you never even knew you might have not even been prepared for, but he will strengthen you and he'll give you everything that you need to accomplish his work. And that is true of the story of Don Wildman. That's been true as I've gotten to know Tim and Allison Wildman so well. And then, of course, Walker and Wesley and, you know, everybody at AFA is just incredible and doing the work of the Lord every day. I'm so excited every morning to get up and get to talk to all of you who tune in to this show to talk about the issues and headlines from a biblical worldview perspective. So you will be encouraged. Go to culturewarrior.movie and watch this incredible film. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net, and I will see you tomorrow morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.